Hello, race fans. The season is underway. A new episode here for the USF Pro Insider. My name is Rob Howden. It is Wednesday, April the 10th, episode 56, as we have a race recap of the Continental Tire Grand Prix of Louisiana from NOLA Motorsports Park. And indeed, we'll wrap things up as well with a quick interview with one of the drivers who is definitely going to be a championship contender in USF Pro 2000 this year, Nikita Johnson. From VRD Racing joins me later in the event, in the podcast. Let's jump into the event, though, at NOLA Motorsports Park. All told, 9 races over the weekend, 3 races per series, and it was the season opener for the drivers in USF Junior. So we were all kind of waiting for that, having gotten the season underway at St. Petersburg for USF 2000 and Pro 2000. But ideal weather, to be honest. I don't think we could have asked for much better weather for an April weekend in Louisiana, because we had mid to high 70s every day, maybe high 60s in the morning, sunny all day Friday and Saturday, a little bit of cloud cover on Sunday, but man, it was beautiful. Bit of a breeze, really not much in terms of humidity. So all told, just fantastic weather for the entire weekend. And it was exciting because the things heated up on the racetrack for sure. We ran a 13-turn, 2.7-mile track. If you've been to the NOLA Motorsports Park or have seen the layout, there is an S's section that leads down on the back part of the racetrack. We didn't run that. We ran the full run straightaway down into turn number 10, which proved to be a really good layout for us because a lot of passes being made down into turn number 10. It was very racy, and it was surprising to me, honestly. I kind of thought, hey, you know, we're going here. We're going to struggle, I think, for lots of passing opportunities. But no, there was passing in turn 1, 3, 4, maybe even into 5 a little bit, but most definitely coming down into turn number 10. So exciting racing all told. So jumping in now, before we talk to Nikita Johnson, we're going to do kind of a race report here over all 3 of the categories. We'll start with USF Pro 2000 and race number 1 of the 3, which took place on Saturday. Chase Denmark from Pabst Racing qualified on the pole and looked great in the qualifying session. But in the end, at the start of that race, it was actually Hunter Yaney who battled through on the opening lap through turns 1, 2, and 3, able to run to the outside of Denmark, and he would not give up and made that move to take over the lead. Nikita Johnson was right in there as well. It was a heck of a battle early on. There were a couple of cautions during the race, including one for Ethan Ho, who tapped the wall in turn 13 while running in the top 5. Hunter Yaney goes to the lead, but Nikita Johnson was pushing. Was able to get by Chase Denmark on one of the restarts and was able to reel in Yaney. Just couldn't quite find a way by. So Hunter Yaney from TJ Speed Motorsport ends up with the race win to start off the triple header. I think that probably shocked a bit of people. He was quick during testing and out of the gate, obviously. But based on what we saw at St. Petersburg, did you put Hunter Yaney on your bingo card as a race winner for that weekend? I don't know that many people did, but I'll tell you, he was good all weekend long, and you'll hear that as we continue to work our way through this. In the end, Yaney with the win, Johnson second, Chase Denmark on the podium for third. To cap off the top 5, a tremendous run for Turn 3 Motorsports' Danny Deshelski as he came up from 12th to 4th, actually won the Tilton Hard Charger Award in the process. Matt Clark actually finished 5th for D-Force Racing. They struggled a bit during the test day, but they were able to dial things in overnight and came out of the gate very strong, so a good top 5 for Matt Clark. Moving to race number 2, Yaney then starting on the pole position, and he led the opening couple laps before a yellow flew, and sadly, it was Danny Deshelski who had such a great run in race number 1. He'd gone off in turn number 6. Here's the thing. This is how this race kind of played out. Nikita Johnson and VRD Racing put fresh rubber sticker tires on for his machine. He started 5th, fell back a little bit at the start. And in talking to him, you'll hear, I don't think he really wanted to fall back, but he knew that he had new tires, had to get them up to temperature. He eventually settled in and then went on a tear. Was able to power his way forward, knocking off car after car. I think he fell back to about 8th at one point. But he worked his way back all the way up to Hunter Yaney. And when he did, you know, there were a couple laps where he really reeled him in. It was, I think, just a matter of time, to be honest. But the duo then puts in this spirited side-by-side battle and kept everybody on their seats for a couple, out of their seats, rather, for a couple laps. They were side-by-side through 1, 2, and 3. Same thing in the back part of the racetrack. Johnson had the new tires, so he was patient. You could see that. Knowing he was going to get by, eventually was able to get the pass done for the win. But those two guys put on a show. A little bit of contact one time, maybe. And nonetheless, Great race for sure. Nikita actually got the Tilton Hart Charger Award for that one. Not a lot of drivers making big moves forward, so he did a great job. Outside of him with the win, Nikita with the win and Yaney in second, Simon Sykes for Pabst Racing emerged with his best result of the season thus far with a third. He needed that. He was putting the pressure on Yaney big time for second, but brought home a much-needed podium for that USF 2000 champion running those scholarship colors. So a good run for Sykes to get himself back in there. I mentioned Matt Clark in race number one. He was back at it again, into the top five, this time up to fourth. So they were really dialing Clark in. He didn't have race-winning pace, but remember, we're talking about a long season. Get a couple podiums, you're going to be in good shape. So fourth in race number two for Matt Clark. And then BN Racing, the new team, or the returning team for Bryn Nuttall with Nicholas Baptiste and Ricardo Escoto. They were quick all weekend long and ended up finishing fifth and sixth in race number two. Fast forward to the final race of the weekend on Sunday afternoon. Caution-free race, the first one we had, because you'll hear in the show. First two races of the weekend, USF Juniors, USF 2000, caution-free on Saturday. It's like, we're in a good place here. We're going to knock out a bunch of caution-free races. Not so good in race number one, as we talked about, for USF Pro. They didn't follow suit. But they did go caution-free on Sunday afternoon, which was great. And it was a smooth race out front for Nikita Johnson. Took the lead early, walked away for the win. His third of the season, having won the second race at St. Petersburg. Same goes for Jace Denmark. He slotted into second, and as he said, it was a boring race. He got into second, didn't have anything with Johnson, but pulled away from everyone else. A Sunday cruise for Jace Denmark, his second podium of the weekend, finishing in second. Hunter Yaney back on the podium for the third time, so he hits for the cycle. First, second, and third. A tremendous weekend for Hunter and TJ Speed Motorsports. Brought him right up into the middle of the championship fight, and he got chased all the way to the end by Sykes and Clark. So three podiums for Matt Clark as well, a couple for Simon Sykes. So again, watching kind of things develop in that class, some of the drivers coming to the front. Again, to be honest, a really rough weekend. We look at some of the takeaways here. Really rough weekend for Lockie Hughes, who left St. Pete with the point lead. Wasn't at the front of the Turn 3 group and really battled. I don't know that I think he may have had one top 10, maybe not. It was not a good weekend for Lockie Hughes. Pace just wasn't there. It was for Johnson and VRD, though. They showed incredibly strong. Again, an overall weekend improvement for the second straight event. If you recall back to St. Petersburg, Nikita had to kind of find some speed throughout the weekend to win on Sunday. Well, it was the same kind of thing here. They weren't the quickest on Friday. They had some issues. You'll hear that when we talked to Nikita. Some mechanical issues they had to work through. Missed a couple of sessions and kind of just kept working and kept fighting and kept digging and came away with a couple of wins, winning race two and three on the weekend. So VRD, and again, as a single car effort right now, we're going to have Sean Rashid back for a couple of races, hearing the potential that we may see Noah Ping come over to a couple of races as well, away from his GB3 program with VRD. But a single car effort, Johnson ends up coming away strong. As I said, as part of these takeaways, Hunter Yaney stars on the weekend, no doubt, to inject himself in the championship conversation. And as I said before, I think a really big bounce back for Simon Sykes after a rough St. Pete, couple of top fives for him. So, championship points after five of 18 rounds. Remember, long way to go, 13 races still to go. Nikita Johnson with 141 points, 39 points ahead of Hunter Yaney. And again, long way to go, but that's more than a full race worth of points for Nikita Johnson. He has been super consistent. Yaney, with that great weekend, 1-2-3, gets himself up to second. Christian Brooks wasn't in the top five at all, but ends up with 80 points still because he was kind of there 6-10 all weekend long. Matt Clark recovers. He's tied now for third with Brooks with 80 points. Denmark, a couple of podiums, brings him back into the hunt after a tough St. Pete. 77 points. Lockie Hughes falls back to sixth. Frankie Mossman, Simon Sykes, Liam Skeets, and Danny Jaschelski round out the top 10 in points. So now going to USF 2000 at NOLA Motorsports Park. And Joey Brienza for Exclusive Autosport was the quickest in qualifying on the pole. Paced most of the opening lap as well, and it was not his luck as Sam Corey coming down into turn number 10, the hard-breaking corner at the end of the back straightaway that leads into the right-hander and then the left-handing sweeping turn 11. Corey dives to the inside to try to take over the lead, locks it up, and essentially cruises through the turn-in. Brienza's got to check up and do the over-under, and he did that, but Garcia from third was all the way over to the left side of the track. did a better over-under from third and was actually able to get around the outside of Brienza to have the inside line for turn number 12. He takes the lead, and from there, essentially unchallenged for the win. As I said, green to checker in that one. Brienza actually obviously got checked up coming through 10 and 11, couldn't get down to 12, didn't get a great run on the front straightaway. Evagoras Papasavas actually able to get the run down to turn one. He takes a spot away. And then Sam Corey was able to get by Brienza on in turn one the next lap as well for third. So I'd say that was almost it up front, except Brienza was able, I believe, to get back by Corey at that point. The battle for six was pretty aggressive near the end on the final lap as Nicholas Giafone was putting pressure on Elliott Cox. Dove it to the inside of turn three in the final circuit. They make contact. Cox spins. Giafone is able to continue, but Hudson Schwartz was right there as well. He takes advantage of it and slides back in for sixth. As I said, green to checker for the first USF 2000 race of the weekend. Sorry, my voice is a little scratchy here today, talking all weekend long. Sam Corey did hold on for fourth ahead of Max Taylor, who finished in fifth. Go down to race number two, and Max Garcia led from pole on that one. From pole for Garcia. But in the end, it was actually Christodoulou, Nico Christodoulou for VRD Racing, who challenged, coming to the outside of turn number 10, throws it in, and we saw a number of drivers early kind of try to pinch down coming through 10 to 11 and almost drive the guy on the inside off. Christodoulou was having nothing of it. Let's put it that way. So he came around the corner. He and Garcia actually made contact in turn 11. That shot Christodoulou's car up in the air a little bit. They came down and offline. This allowed Hudson Schwartz to slide back through for the lead. Obviously, we know how he slid through for a position in race one. This time, Schwartz for Pabst Racing taking the lead. The contact dropped Garcia all the way back to sixth. Max Taylor was able to get by Christodoulou for second as well. And then, of course, Taylor then set out for Schwartz. This is where things got interesting. So Schwartz dropped the wheel coming out of turn six. Very fast part of the racetrack. If you watched any of it, they come through five, six, seven, eight, seven potentially flat out. These guys were getting at it, dropped the wheel and losing out that forward bite and almost having to, you know, control the car, pedal a little bit. Both Taylor and Christodoulou able to get by coming out at 8-9 and down to 10, moving Schwartz back into third. So it's a VRD 1-2, right? They come down the front straightaway, good shape. Coming through turn three, back over to turn four for the first time. Taylor trying to make a big wide run into four. Just touched the left side on the entry curbing and looped the car around. Around it goes, Christodoulou with nowhere to go. He has to go to the grass. In fact, spins in the grass. Taylor able to continue on. I think he was like fifth or sixth. But Christodoulou went all the way to the back. Was able to get on. They got a couple of drivers in front. Then he dropped the wheel with cold tires and wet tires. All the grass in the tires coming through six and seven. He went to dead last. Schwartz, at this point, again, Schwartz in the right place at the right time. We've already said this once before. He slips through to take the lead. But Papasavas was aggressive. He stole from him around the outside into turn number 10. Evagoras, after finishing decently in the first race, wants that win. So it took it back away. Taylor was all the way back to 10th at that point. Christodoulou was last. So you think, man, these guys, not a good week, not a good race. Garcia actually got lucky for that. He moved up to third. But we had a caution flag on lap number 9. Stacked and packed everybody back up. Carson Edger spun around. So Papasavas was leading him back to the green. This is where things got kind of wild and a little bit confusing. As they come out of turn number 13, all of a sudden, Sam Corey jumps to the right, and he starts on the throttle. I guess the green flag had flown. He heard green, green, green from the spotter on the radio. He was the first guy on it. Everybody else kind of checked up. Papasavas still holds on. He gets on the throttle, but Corey's gone. He's a couple car lengths up the road by the time they get to start finish. It was Thomas Schrag from Exclusive Autosport who got the short end of the stick. Everybody kind of stacking up. He's on the throttle. He gets his nose knocked off because the guy in front of him locks up on the brakes. That brings out the yellow. Corey has the lead, so he handles the restart fine. He pulls away. Essentially, it's a battle for second, third, and fourth. Corey goes away for his first win of the year, unchallenged, in what was essentially a a two-lap, three-lap dash at the end. Papasava somehow holding on for second. He had another podium for Evagoras, his fourth of the year at that point. Max Garcia on the podium for third. Schwartz was fourth. And Max Taylor actually gets back up to fifth. He was actually sixth on the racetrack. Christodoulou was seventh, coming, you know, obviously taking full advantage of that restart. Christodoulou from, what, 20th all the way up into seventh. And it actually ended up being for fifth and sixth for Taylor and Christodoulou because Brianza had contact on the last lap with Elliot Cox, and that dropped him down the order, moving Taylor up to fifth and Christodoulou to sixth. So a lot of action in race number two. Back over to race number three, and coming back from his race two issues, it was Nico Christodoulou who jumped out to a strong lead until lap four yellow came out when Lucas Fercuri went off track in turn three. I thought Christodoulou might have been able to pull away at that point, but instead, Taylor able to take the lead on the restart in turn four. Later that lap, Christodoulou and Garcia get together as they came out of the high-speed turn eight and nine. That's what rolls you out on the back straightaway. Garcia drops the wheel, goes down to sixth, but he's able to get right back on Joey Brienza in turn one with a move for P5. You think, again, opportunity for guys up front to pull away, but no. A second caution on lap number 10 as Xavier Kokai and Carson Edder get together in turn five. At this point, we circulated for a couple laps under the yellow. Now, again, 15 lap races for USF 2000. It was 12 for Junior, 18 for Pro 2000. Circulating around a couple laps to try to get things done, but we don't want to finish under the yellow. Race control says, hey, we'll go red. They preserve a two lap shootout for the win. So it got exciting, as we know. So at this point, Taylor's leading on the restart. Christodoulou drives around outside of him in turn number one to take the lead. Then Papasavas able to lunge inside of Taylor in turn three, a late lunge to push him back into second and move Taylor back to third. That's the way they finished at the line. Christodoulou with the win. Papasavas five straight podiums. He ends up finishing second. Taylor in third. Garcia was able to fight back after the contact to fourth. And Joey Brianza capped off a really solid weekend in fifth. Again, remember, if Brianza hadn't got the penalty, it would have been another fifth for Brianza. So a chance for three podiums. He ends up going down the order in race two. But nonetheless, it caps off a good weekend for Brianza. So here's my takeaways from USF 2000. Super strong weekend for Garcia. He extends his win streak to three and podium streak to five. Leaves with the point lead. But again, there's drivers who are stepping up to battle. Evagoras Papasavas, the win is just around the corner for the Jay Howard driver development guy because model of consistency, five straight podiums. I'm telling you, just needs to minimize a couple of minor errors and he's going to get that first win, but I think really good momentum for Evagoras to start the season. VRD looked very, very strong, let's put it that way, with Christodoulou and Taylor. Both those guys look ready to run for a championship, so they look good. And as I said, right to finish off race three, shout out to Joey Brianza. Two top fives push him up to fifth in the standings. And here are the standings after five of the 18 races. Garcia ahead now by 16 markers over Papasavas. It's the consistency of Papasavas, no race wins, but only 16 points back. Garcia with 139 points. Papasavas with 123. That race win for Sam Corey from Pabst Racing jumps him up into third. Nico Christodoulou, although up and down like crazy, fourth with 85 points. Brianza fifth with 69. Then it's Quinn Armstrong consistently top and running top 10. He's got 66 points at sixth. Max Taylor seventh. Elliot Cox eighth. Hutchin Schwartz ninth. And Ayrton Houck rounding out the top 10. Now let's cap off the race report segment of this podcast here with USF Juniors. And the pole sitter getting things underway was Liam McNeely, fastest driver in what were split qualifying sessions. Something a little different for juniors this year. Took the 26-car grid, put it into two 13-car groups, and then they roll out for 20 minutes each for qualifying. Whoever's outright fastest gets the pole in that whole group and goes to the inside line. So you're not, if you're third in your group, you're row three. If you're seventh in your group, you're row seven. So you stay within the rows of your group. So McNeely starts on pole, but Weldon able to get by very quickly to go into the lead. Would not be challenged from there. Went green to checker for the first race of the weekend. Everybody settled in. Weldon was smoking fast on cold tires. McNeely had to go on full defense because he was getting attacked by Max Taylor. Everybody was kind of in the fight, and it was just one of those cases where a driver gets out into the lead through the first number of corners down to the back straightaway with a huge lead. Everybody else kind of, you know, elbows up running the defensive line, and with Weldon running full race lines, it wasn't long before he was long gone. Max Taylor, running double duty on the weekend, potentially the entire year, was able to take second from McNeely early, and then McNeely actually had to get challenged by D-Force Racing's Vinicius Tesoro and Exclusive Autosports' Jack Jeffers. They were lined up pretty good. Past the halfway point of a 12-lap or lap number 9, McNeely got back by Taylor for second with a great move to the outside of turn 1. And we saw a lot of outside moves in turn 1 because as you get outside turn 1, you're setting yourself back up to the inside of turn 2. And then, you know, both those 2 and 3 are both left-handers. But you got to get it done on the outside of turn 1. And McNeely was able to do it and take that spot. So McNeely went to second, Taylor to third. One of the drivers really on the move, which was impressive, was InterMS driver Ariel Elkin. Who started 14th, Tilton Hard Charger for sure, up to P5, got past Jack Jeffers with 2 to go to get that position. So just a really good run for Elkin. I think kind of a good introduction to what we're going to see out of InterMS, because Ariel Elkin and Augusto Soto Sharipa were fast all weekend long. InterMS is going to be, they're going to win some races this year, I think, to be honest with you. It's going to be a really interesting year. As I said, Weldon long gone, ended up with a 7-plus second win. McNeely eventually pulled away for second as well, unchallenged. Taylor had to battle with Tesoro over the final laps, that's for sure. Because we really had 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th nose to tail across the line. Taylor, Tesoro, Elkin, and Jeffers. On to race 2 for USF Juniors. And Weldon flat checked out on the opening lap because... Again, out early through turns 3, he was fine. Drivers behind him getting pretty aggressive. And then coming through turn 4, out of turn number 4, Vinicius Tesoro, essentially dead stick on the racetrack. I was calling out Sharipa first. Then I thought it might have been Elkin because the shot, the camera shot was from behind. And I wasn't able to pick out exactly who it was. It was Tesoro from probably 4th. And literally came out of 4, and it's like the engine was shut off, or he was knocked out of gear, whatever it was. Everybody scattered left and right. I can't believe he didn't get driven over top of, but thankfully, no contact whatsoever. Weldon just checks out as a result. McNeely's in second. He ends up with a great battle with Augusto Soto Sharipa, another one of the InterMS drivers. Like I said, yellow came out on lap number 5, though. That big lead that Weldon had was gone when Aiden Potter lost it coming through 13. Backed it into the wall. His wing was in the middle of the track. That brought the yellow out. And that gave a chance for McNeely to go at Weldon in turn 1 on the restart. And he did. He was able to go around the outside again like he did before. Able to hold off Weldon. And at that point, he held off all challenges for the lead. So Weldon wins the first one. Liam McNeely for J. Howard Driver Development score in the second one. Max Taylor was third on the racetrack, having got past Elkin. But if you go back and look at the restart, easy to see that he jumped the start, pulled out early at the start, which dropped him to 6th behind Elkin, Soto Sharipa, and Jack Jeffers. So Elkin goes up into the third spot on the podium, P3 for InterMS. His teammate Soto Sharipa in 4th, and Jack Jeffers another solid run to P5. Race number 3, listen, we go green to checker again, which was great. McNeely led the opening lap again, but the problem was the big run down on the opening circuit. Everybody else behind him coming down into turn number 10. Can't quite get it wowed up. Can't quite make the corner. Knows if he feeds the wheel to get it into the corner, things probably going to go around. So he ends up taking the cut through all the way through over to turn number 12. And then coming through, Ariel Elkin had gone into second spot. So race control calls down. Liam, you got to give it up. He does. So Elkin assumes the lead. And at that point, honestly, I thought Elkin might be able to pull away. But Weldon was in second and really ran him down and got close to him and eventually made a move for the lead inside of turn 1. Saw lots of outside turn 1s. He started to the outside. Elkin kind of moved that way. Weldon darted back to the inside, got to the inside, took the lead. At that point, would not give up. Long gone. Able to pull out, get rolling. And of course, the battle for second happens again, right? Every time you see that fight for second happen, leader pulls away. And once again, for the second race, Weldon is going to be the benefactor of that. He pulls away unchallenged. Taylor was eventually able to grab a hold of second and pull away, held that spot, while McNeely did the same to Elkin to lock down the podium. So in the end, it was Weldon, Taylor, and McNeely on the podium. Again, 3 drivers are obviously flexing their muscles as championship contenders. Second half of the race was actually pretty processional. Everybody kind of settled in, big gaps between everybody. Weldon, Taylor, McNeely, Elkin ended up finishing in fourth spot ahead of Tesoro in fifth. So Tesoro coming back from that issue he had in race number two. And indeed, I didn't say Tesoro having fell to the tail of the field for the issue. Nothing wrong with the car. I didn't find out exactly what it was, but he drove back up to 12th. Tesoro did. So impressive. My takeaway is obviously number one, Junior's going green to Checker in two of their three races. Oh, yeah. Again, that's what we want for these young drivers. We want green flag laps, and we did it again here. Great race draft, great respect. Weldon showing that he may be the best right now in the field on cold tires. The guy was an absolute beast through turn one. Some of the faster corners on the racetrack in the opening laps, able to pull away. So very strong as well. But I think, indeed, one of my takeaways is that we've got a lot of really good drivers in this field. Liam McNeely coming from GB4 last year is going to be one to watch. And I don't think, and again, Inter-MS, unbelievably good out of the gate. So watch for Elkin and Soto Sharipa to be in the fight. And I'd also say, I don't think we've seen everything from Exclusive Autosport. I expected Jack Jeffers to be one in the fight. They just didn't seem to have the best setup because the whole team actually did really good. There were times when they were in the top 10 with Cooley and with Martella and Vergara. There's speed there out of that crew. So I think they're going to keep getting better. I was very impressed with Anthony Martella, who I think really stepped things up to battle it out with Evan Cooley and Joao Vergara, who have been in the car, I think, a little more than him. So all told, after three races of 16, Sebastian Weldon with the lead, but by only 9 points ahead of Liam McNeely. Max Taylor in third with 62, Ariel Elkin fourth with 58, and Vinicius Tesoro with 46. He and Jack Jeffers tied for fifth. Bruno Ribeiro, 35. Soto Sharipa, 34. Leonardo Scorpione for Zanella Racing, pretty good in their debut, 33 points. And Evan Cooley for Exclusive Autosport, as I had mentioned, ends up actually had a really good run in the opening race. Cooley went off in the opening lap of qualifying, didn't qualify at all, started 26th. Drove his way all the way up to, I think, 13th or 14th in the race. So, all told, a good run there, and he caps off the top 10 of points. So, there's your recap of NOLA Motorsports Park. And the first time on the season, we have all three series running together. A full look at the USF Pro Championships presented by Continental Tire. But again, overall, I'll give you some of my takeaways there, right? One of the biggest takeaways was Nikita Johnson. Super impressive, winning his third race of the season and really kind of taking control of the second half of the weekend at NOLA. VRD strong, a single car effort. He had issues early on, but man, Nikita was super good. I was able to actually catch up with Nikita yesterday. We sat down for a quick little chat. So let's hear my interview with the driver who won two races in USF Pro 2000 and will head to the month of May in Indianapolis with a point lead. Here's my interview with Nikita Johnson. Well, Nikita, thank you so much for joining me here on the USF Pro Insider Podcast. I appreciate it. Obviously, for you, here we are, Tuesday, April the 9th. You're fresh off what was a tremendous weekend at NOLA. Got to feel pretty good coming away from an event like that where you can get a couple of wins, stretch out a point lead, and really have all cylinders firing, right, to start the season.
Yes, I mean, it feels amazing to get two wins in the same weekend and get a second. So very good points haul. Just very excited for the month of May. But of course, we know anything can happen at the Indianapolis road course. So I think until after the month of May, we'll see what the real standings are.
Yeah, I agree with that. You never want to look too early in the season. You have a good lead, as you know, but everything can happen. And it's happened in the past. We've seen it. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the start of the season first. Obviously, my second podcast of the year. So I want to kind of go back a little bit to St. Petersburg. You and I sat down. You were joined me as a driver analyst in our broadcast on USF Pro TV. And we talked a little bit about what you guys worked on. You obviously, you come in race one, you did well in race one, but race two, you kind of step things up. Can you tell us a little bit about how that weekend progressed? Did you roll out of the onto the track quickly during practice or did you have to work at it?
I think we had to work for it a little bit. Of course, I'm pretty good at St. Pete. We did good in 2023 in the USF 2000. But we were a little bit slow, not like slow, but we were a little bit off the pace in practice and qualifying. And we knew that we needed to go work a little bit harder. And so after race one, we took good points home. And then we just grinded pretty hard on the video and data and made sure we knew what change to make for race two and what changes on the driver too, because the track keeps progressing throughout the weekend, and yeah, you can't drive the same.
I was going to ask about that. You know, when you know the car's not absolutely perfect, have you got yourself to the point where you don't overdrive it? You know, hey, listen, this is about all I can pull out of this horse right now.
Yes, I think that's where experience comes in, where you know not like when to overdrive it sometimes and when not to overdrive it. So like I'm pretty good with understanding how my car is, and like sometimes when you overdrive it, you know, you go maybe a few tenths slower, or you burn your tires up faster, and then at the end of the race you struggle for positions. But I think with experience, you know when to overdrive and when to underdrive because of how the car is set up.
Especially the track as well. I don't think St. Pete's a real great place to overdrive it, because a little mistake when you're in the wall. Now, the interesting thing as well, I talked about this. So a mirror copy of 2023 with USF 2000, Lockie Hughes winning the first race, you coming and winning the second race. So really, you talked about the experience you have at St. Pete, and you're pretty good at the racetrack, but you went through the thing before. You didn't win race one. You settled in. You won race two last year. Same thing happened this year. So, you know, you'd already gone through that mentally as well.
Yes, I mean, it's kind of crazy that I won on Sunday again, a year later, but we had basically the same thing as last year. The only thing was we got third instead of, I think, fourth. Yep. So we knew what we did last year and what worked, and we used that same mindset for this year, and I think that's what really helped us at St. Pete.
Let's talk about the fact that really St. Petersburg, your home, you live right close there in Gulfport. So that race is, you know, your home race. At 14 years of age and you ran USF 2000, there was pressure there, but then you'd already won there. People kind of knew who you were. All of a sudden, you know, you were there when they started building the track. All these things that were going on with the race itself, official happenings, you were right there. You were kind of one of the poster guys. Same goes with the opening party, the kickoff party at your sponsor's bar, the pub. How much pressure was that coming in? Like at 15 years of age, it blows me away. I'm not going to sit here and toot your horn, because you know how hard it is, but to come into a weekend like that at 15, did you feel the pressure, or are you getting used to it?
I felt a bit of pressure because in 2023, my name wasn't really out there at that point. Right. So all people knew was, oh, he's racing in the Grand Prix. And that's like my first time. And, you know, I'm just a 14-year-old that didn't really do anything. My second year in car. I won three times in juniors, but you know, not too many people look at that. They're like, oh, this is his first time racing at St. Pete. So I was kind of an underdog at that point. And then this year everybody knew I was coming back. And so there was a lot of pressure to go do well, I think, because you know, everybody's getting interviews with you. And they hope that later on in the weekend that you end up winning. I think the pressure, I'm getting used to the pressure now. So that's one of the great things about the series, is that we get to be on camera, and you know, sometimes I can be on a podcast like right now, or pull the race with you. So it just helps getting used to that pressure.
I'll say this. I went to dinner on Sunday night, and we were talking to our server, and we were telling her that we were at part of the race. And she's like, do you know that our local driver won? I said, yeah, actually, I know all about Nikita. So she even knew, the server knew that you had already won earlier that day. So I thought that was awesome. So before we get to NOLA, because we can't just jump, because you jumped. You literally flew from here to, or from Florida to England to do some testing at Alton Park in GB3. Those of you who don't know that Nikita, and you can confirm this, you're planning on doing a majority of the GB3 series. You have to turn 16 first before you can race in the series. But then you're going to do the whole program, correct?
Yes, sir. So once I turn 16, that's when I'll start. I'll miss the first two race weekends. So I already missed Alton Park.
Yeah.
And I'll miss Silverstone. But other than that, I'll start at Spa, which is like, I think, a week later after the Oval. Wow. So I'll go from driving an Oval to Spa.
Yeah. Yeah, the dichotomies, right? Complete contrast.
A little bit.
I love it, though. That's great. So, hey, listen, so driving that car and then coming back, can you give us some thoughts on the differences between the two cars?
So it's not too big of a jump, because it's actually the same chassis.
Yeah.
So that's pretty nice. But the only things that are different is that it's running a different tire, and the tires are thinner. So we're running like USF 2000 size tires in that. We also have a little bit more front aero, with the end plates are a bit larger.
Yeah,
the rear wing comes down, so instead of cutting off, we have the end plate come all the way down, and there's some more under under the car downforce, like floor downforce.
Yep.
So, but besides that, it's just a little bit more downforce, a little bit faster, and a little bit less mechanical grip. So it's a bit tough to go back and forth.
I would think,
especially
so.
The cars, but also the tracks are completely different too. You have to think about that. We're racing on IndyCar certified tracks, like USAC and certified, and they're different tarmac compared to FIA tracks.
Yep.
So
yep.
That's one of the biggest things, I think, and turning the tire on, like how fast and how many build laps do you need to make sure the tire's in the right window? Because in GB3, you know, you want maybe 2 or 3 build laps. If you go too fast, you're going to peak really quickly and fall off. And I think that's a bit the same in USF Pro 2000, that you have to get your tires in the right window. But of course, they're two different tires, and you just have to remember that little, those tiny key points to help you go do well.
Exactly. And it's, you know, I talk a little bit about it sometimes on the broadcast. People think in a qualifying session, you go out and just blast off as many laps as you can in 20 minutes. But indeed, as you said, you're building up, you're taking care of the tires. You know exactly where that window is. You got to make sure there's nobody around you during those times when you're able to get that free lap, maybe check up for a lap. They make sure you have a window. So indeed, that's something we'll dive into a little bit later on in a podcast later in the year. I think get some drivers on to talk about the intricacies of qualifying. Let's go into NOLA right now. I found it interesting. So we did a day when we were there for spring training. So everybody had a lot of track time there. I went back. You only ran one of the three practice sessions on Friday morning. Is that the case? And why you're smiling? Why was that?
Yes, that's the case. I only did one full practice session. So we're running a lithium battery, which some people do, some people don't.
That's, I heard about this, right?
We want it for some of the power. So then you don't always have to, you know, plug it in when you come in, because that just takes more time. There's pros and cons. I could go through it, but you know, this is,
you don't need to,
it's not too much. We don't have all the time in the world, but, so the battery ended up blowing up, not like blowing up, but started smoking and, just failed. And then session two, we had an engine problem where I was about 20 mile per hour down. So I was a USF 2000 in the straight line. But we think that was electrical, but we're not exactly sure. So we just came in, changed the engine quickly, and we almost got it out for practice three, but we just decided to make sure everything was right on the car. Don't try to rush it. We knew that we were going to go get a full, I forgot, I think, like, what was it, 25-minute session or 30?
There's still the full official practice session was that afternoon. So you,
right.
Yeah, you did decently well there, not having a lot of time on the track. You were third in the official practice session. So let's roll into the, obviously there's a couple of qualifying sessions on Saturday, one race and then the two on Sunday. You qualified eighth in the opening race, which is interesting because it wasn't really foretelling of how good you'd be throughout the weekend, right? You were eighth, I think, and then fifth, I think, in qualifying two. Were you just taking your time coming up to speed? Because by the end of the weekend, you were the outright fastest guy. Nobody had anything for you.
Not really. In qualifying one, we got a little bit messed up, and I wasn't able to do the last 5 minutes. So we did one full set, and the track was just getting fast. And then on the second set, that's when everybody went fast. But I think it's turn five. I got a big snap because we had tailwind, and I hit the bumps wrong.
Okay.
And where the track comes together, I hit that hole, and I bent my left front push rod, and I popped the tire off the rim. So I couldn't do the last 5 minutes. So I went from, like, I think top three or top four to eighth.
I missed that.
And then qualifying two, we just were, I think, 2/10 out of it. So qualifying two, we weren't too far out. We just needed a tiny bit more.
And I'll say that you're a P5. And like you said, just 0.2 seconds. This year's program is so tight. It's unbelievable. Overall, though, which when we got racing, super consistent weekend for you. Good opening race. But let's kind of fast forward to race number two, that battle you had with Hunter Yaney. You put on fresh rubber that for that race, I believe, for race two. You fell back a little bit at the start. But as soon as the tires got up to temperature, man, you went to work and started coming forward. Talk a bit about that decision to go to fresh tires on that session. You knew it was going to be a little bit of time before you got to speed, but then let's go talk about that side-by-side battle with Hunter, because that was fantastic.
Right. So since I missed a lot of practices, we couldn't use new tires. So we saved it for race two.
Yep.
And then we knew that in the start, we would have low tire pressures and that it would be brand new. So I fell back a little bit, but once they turned on, it was very fast. And then the race with Hunter, I mean, I think that was very good. It was like, what, four laps?
You guys were side by side for almost a full lap. It was wild.
Yes, it was pretty nice. Like in the first race, I haven't raced him in, I don't know, 4 years maybe. So I didn't know exactly what he was going to do. So I played it a bit safe, got some points home. In race two, I knew we were fast. We had fresh rubber. I don't think almost anybody else besides maybe two or three cars had fresh rubber.
Yeah.
So I knew that we were very fast and at some point I would get him. I just had to keep trying. And I finally did going into turn one.
Yeah, you mentioned that when we talked on the podium that you talked about patience, right? You had to be patient. You knew you had the tire advantage, but you just had to be patient. You guys were side by side through one, through two, three. I think you were side by side in some of the high speed stuff at the back. It was so much fun to watch. But all told, like you said, a great run for you. Let's talk about race three then, because race three, it seems like whatever you guys found in race two, you kind of transitioned it. And again, another win in race three. You were a rocket in race three as well.
Yes, I mean, even though we won, we knew that we could be better. And I think it was a bit more of my driving that we fixed.
Okay.
So we fixed some of my driving, which, I mean, it wasn't bad, but I'm talking about like a few tenths maybe. Not like half second or a second, but it's all about the small stuff, like this few tenths and maybe turn one or last turn or a few of the fast section stuff. So we were trying to see what we could change on the car and change on the driver, but we hit it right. And as you could see in race three, we were very fast.
Without giving away any of your secrets, what is it? What does it take to have a fast lap at NOLA? Because it's such a flat racetrack, but there's a lot of high speed stuff. You're like carrying a lot. I know turn one, you're trying to carry a lot of speed into turn number one. The back part of the racetrack super fast. Is that kind of what it comes down to? Is just being able to carry a lot more speed, some of the, you know, that corner speed?
I think so. I mean, you have to have a pretty good amount of minimum at this track. And I think every driver that's raced here knows that you have to have a high minimum speed in like turn one and turn five, turn six, turn four, three, like almost every corner on the track, you have to have high minimum speed, but it's also a lot of commitment here.
That's right.
So turn one, you have a big bump on the entry and you have to figure out how to get over that. And then turn three, it's all about breaking the latest and getting good exit. And then turn five, six and seven, I think that back section, the double right.
Yeah.
I think it's six and seven, but not exactly sure. The double right.
Yep. You're right.
It's a lot of commitment back there. So you have to trust the car, trust yourself, and you just have to kind of send it through there.
Are you guys
I think it's just
are commitment. You flat out back there?
Not in the race. We
not
had
in the race.
Some tailwind.
Okay.
I think I got it like once in practice, but it was very hard. But in the race, I think everybody was pretty conservative through there because I was lifting and I know I was pulling people through there. So they're lifting.
You were
too.
Lifting. Okay. All right. So again, a great season for you to a way to get out of the gate, St. Petersburg strong. You've got this consistent run now of, you know, top five finishes. Let's before we kind of look forward to the season, let's kind of first step back and talk about VRD racing a little bit. You've been with them for a while. How long have you been with VRD? When did you first start with them?
December 2019. So been a long time.
It has. Like,
you know, this year it'll be 5 years. So
what did you first start doing? Was it were they supporting some of your karting stuff? Did Dan have you in a car at that point? Were you doing some F4 race driving, or what was it first that you did?
So I started F4, the US F4 car, back in 2019. But I originally met him in 2017 when I raced with Bennett and go-karts.
Yeah.
And he came over as an engineer to help, you know, on the karting side. And also, I think, on the car side for a little bit. But then he started his own team, which was VRD. Mm-hmm. And then we met him a few years later in 2019. And we're like, we kind of want to join you. See what, like, go watch me and see what you think. And after that, we just connected and then kept going and going forward. We did the academy until 2022 and a lot of good bit of F4 testing and then some USF 2000 testing in, I think, end of 2021 and 2022. While I was racing USF juniors, I tested 2000.
Yeah. And so 5 years. So what is it? What is it about the culture there? What is it about the setup with that team that works for you?
I think it's more that we have a kind of a different mentality in a way, trying to go about it. We know even if we have a bad race, we know that there's a few more races. So we won't get down on ourselves. We'll just figure out how to get better. And I think some drivers and maybe some teams, they kind of focus on the bad results. And in racing, you have to just keep moving forward and try to offset the bad race with the good race.
Listen, I'll send it to any driver who didn't have a good one, right? You got to put that behind you. Mm-hmm. It's easier said than done. A lot of drivers, you said, will struggle with the fact that they had a bad race one and maybe can't bounce it back. And I talk about people bouncing back, a redemption race coming back, right? You haven't had to have that yet this year because you've had, you know, five good runs. But again, that's a mindset that I think is very successful if you can literally put everything else behind you if you've had a rough run.
Right, I agree. And I mean, at some point throughout the season, there will probably be a bad race or a bad run. That's just how racing goes. Sometimes it's going to be bad, but I think another big part of our team is that we all want to win. Everybody wants to win on the team. And, you know, we have the hashtag winners win. So we really want to win. And that's all we care about. We don't really care about second or third too much. It's good points, but we're always striving to go win.
Yeah. I've heard that so many times from you drivers. I've asked about points. They're like, I'm just going to win races. And when I win races, the championship takes care of itself. Right.
Right.
Exactly. Yes. All right.
But I mean,
keep going.
Oh, I was going to say, right now, I think in the beginning of the season, wins are very important. And then later on, maybe like after Mid-Ohio or Road America, you can start being more conservative and get seconds and thirds and get points. But I think right now, like what I've been focusing on was trying to get out front, at least get in the lead and then control the race or just win, because that's this series rewards you on wins, in my opinion, because you have such a big gap from first to second or third.
Coming out of the gate, when you're winning races, you're making a statement as well,
right?
Everybody knows that, you know, that when you're coming, you're going for a race win. So you've made that statement. You mentioned it already. It's happened in the past. Last year, as we know, Miles Rowe was able to win a bunch of races coming out of the gate, and then he kind of backed off of it. He didn't have to be in the middle of the big fights because he had such a point lead. He was taking fourths. He was taking thirds and fifths, and was fine with him. And then same when you go back to Christian Rasmussen, who had that great start in USF 2000. He needed that great start because he had some issues in Indianapolis during the COVID season. Right. That was a Labor Day weekend. Then we had an issue at Mid-Ohio, and a 72-point lead came down to like 3 points. So a lead like that, great coming out of the gate, as you said. Let's talk about the rest of the season now, though. You have a 39-point lead. We're not talking about that right now. But 39 points is what you'll take into the rest of the season. Is there a track you look down at the schedule and you say, I'm really looking forward to getting to that one?
I think Toronto.
Yeah.
I think every driver, well, most drivers love a street course. And for me, Toronto, I think, will be the most fun track. And Indianapolis. Indianapolis, anything can happen, but it's a triple header.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun. A lot of points on the table for that. And Toronto, just the atmosphere there is amazing.
It is. The fans up here in Toronto are fantastic. We get, obviously, on the free Friday, there's just a ton of people there. And the racetrack, do you think the racetrack's tougher than St. Petersburg? I had this conversation when we were in Florida. Somebody was talking about the fact that St. Pete's tough, but Toronto is tougher because it's a little more narrow and there's a couple of parts. The last complex of corners is pretty sketchy there.
I think it depends on what type of driver you are, too.
Ooh, okay, yeah.
But I think both are equally as hard. They have walls everywhere, so that's pretty intimidating for the first time.
Yep.
But I know Toronto got repaved with the S's in the final section, so that made it a lot easier. So now it's pretty smooth through there. But I think St. Pete has changed a lot this year from when I drove it last year.
All right.
But we'll see how Toronto changes, because I don't know how many cars drive through the street there. I know in St. Pete there's a lot. Yeah. But we'll just see how the track changes.
Yeah, the only issue for Toronto is wall-to-wall traffic on Lakeshore Boulevard. That's a long straightaway. Yeah. That's really not that big of an issue. You guys just get on the binders and climb back up the hill through the right-left combination.
Right.
So again, folks, getting the season underway, as we said, St. Petersburg, NOLA Motorsports Park already in the books. Nikita Johnson, 15 years of age. When do you turn 16 anyways?
May 25th. So
there you go.
Next year, it'll be on the 500.
Ooh. Nice.
So I was actually born on the 500, so it's going to be pretty cool to celebrate it again on the 500.
That's a solid birthday to have as a race car driver, for sure.
I agree.
Nikita, thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate it. Wanted to chat with you briefly after a fantastic weekend at NOLA Motorsports Park. As you said, the month of May is next for USF 2000, USF Pro 2000. The road course weekend, 2 weeks later, the Freedom 90. Are you ready to go for an oval win?
Yes, I think this year will be very fast on the oval. I have more experience there, and it's going to be higher downforce cars, so it'll be fun.
That's exactly that. Look out, folks. Nikita Johnson, just 15 years of age, but he is on his way to the NTT IndyCar Series, potentially win a championship this year. Your early point leader in USF Pro 2000. Nikita, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rob.
Indeed, a fantastic opportunity to talk with Nikita, and it's, for me, a great chat because knowing Nikita from his first year in USF Juniors back in, 2022, and then last year, everything, running up to USF 2000, then winning the races, just in USF Pro at COTA, to watch, you can hear and see his maturation over 2023. He's only 15 years of age still, which is remarkable, but you can just hear how much more relaxed he is in an interview, more calm. There's big things coming for Nikita Johnson. I'm telling you, folks, there's no doubt about that. He's going to run GB3 as well this year, as he had said. You never know. This guy could be, I'd love to see him, maybe make the move up to Indy next, but Willie, if he ends up winning the championship here, if he doesn't, he could come back for one more year of USF Pro. But man, if he's running GB3 as well, he could be looking at FIA F3, and try to work his way to F1 or IndyCar. The bottom line is he's shown the ability to get the job done. Great interview with Nikita, and looking forward to seeing him at the month of May, of course. And let's talk about that, because the next race, let's look at the calendar. USF Juniors back on track before the month of May, April 25th, 26th, a Thursday-Friday event where they will join the NTT IndyCar Series as part of the event at Barber Motorsports Park. Looking forward to that one for sure, as there'll be a standalone race for our drivers in USF Juniors. Expecting 26, maybe 27 or 28 drivers for that one. We'll see how it plays out. Because there are drivers in the wings that we expect to come out once they get some more testing in. Other than that, USF 2000, USF Pro 2000, looking forward to that month of May, beginning, of course, on May 9th, 10th, and 11th at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course. All the drivers love coming to the racing capital of the world, being able to come underneath the tunnel out into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Pagoda, the Yard of Bricks, you name it. It's Indianapolis. Everybody wants to win there for sure. And then from there, of course, a couple weeks later, the Carb Night Classic at Indianapolis Raceway Park. Looking forward to the Freedom 75 and the Freedom 90. Another race that everybody wants to put on their resume. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this edition of the podcast. We're going to be doing race reports after all the events, and I'll try to fill in the other weeks with interviews with a couple of the drivers to find out what they're up to, how they're looking at the season, and to give you an opportunity to learn more about the young racers. 65 plus this year, the biggest field ever in Anderson Promotions USF Pro Championships competition since we restarted it back in 2010 with USF 2000. I think there were 67 drivers, or 67 entries for the weekend at NOLA, the biggest race we've had ever. So amazing start to the 2024 season. This program is running at full song. And if you missed anything, make sure you download the USF Pro Championship Series app. The podcast is on there. All the live coverage, live timing. Check out the new edition of The Climb, our mini documentary. That'll be coming out soon. The first episode from St. Petersburg is out. Look forward for the second one is out. Well, they were filming throughout the weekend at NOLA Motorsports Park. Make sure you can always watch all the races if you haven't seen them back on the YouTube channel as well. Again, full coverage, everything available here on both the YouTube channel and the series app. Folks, I appreciate you tuning into the podcast. Do me a favor, though. If you saw it on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, do me a favor and share it. We want to get this thing out to as many people as we possibly can. Let's spread the word of some of the best racing in open-wheel competition around the world, the USF Pro Championships presented by Continental Tire. Again, big thank you to everybody at Anderson Promotions and Continental Tire. Thanks, folks. Great time. My name's Rob Howden. Bye for now.